Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest is Sharib Khan. Sharib is the founder of TrialX, which is an online platform for connecting researchers who are doing clinical studies with the patients out there. Did I describe it correctly, Sharib?
That's right, actually. You know, TrialX makes solutions to connect patients to clinical trials, clinical research, in general, yeah, that's right.
How many people did you help so far?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, since launching in 2008, thousands of patients have used our trial finder technology to actually find investigators, researchers doing studies for, you know, all sorts of cancers, diabetes, asthma, you know, fertility issues, women issues, like all sorts of trials. You know, we list all the studies that are available, that are ongoing in the United States. And, you know, patients use that.
I saw an article somewhere which said you helped over 1 million people. Does that sound right?
That I might be referring to some other number. I think in terms of patients, it's like thousands of patients who have interacted with our tools and connected with these researchers. Mm-hmm. I think in general, what that might be referring to is that 1 million patients are recruited in studies every year, or some about that range. So
okay,
we're trying to help, you know, among those population of people who are looking for trials and treatments for, you know, participating in new drug treatment studies, you know, find these researchers and connect with them. So yeah, that's the bigger population, but our tools have helped, you know, in the thousands, you know, like, of them connect with these researchers since 2008.
So how does it make it profitable for you, this model? What is the business model?
So the business model, I mean, there is a consumer side of it, which, you know, of course, it's all free service. Patients can come and find trials. But there is the business side of it where, you know, this trial finder not only lives on our website, but also we white label it and give it to these large academic medical centers that are doing a lot of these studies and trials, like, you know, University of Pennsylvania, you know, Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, associated with the Harvard Medical School, New York Presbyterian Hospital, NYU, etc. They're doing like, you know, 500, 600, sometimes even 1,000 studies. So we take the same TrialX technology and allow, create a web listing of all these organization studies on their website. So if you go to, let's say, NYU's cancer website, you'll see a link saying find trials at NYU. So that link will go to our iConnect page, the TrialX iConnect page, which will list all the studies going on at NYU, and then allow the patients to search them and reach out to the investigators at those universities.
I see. So these universities and organizations are the ones who are paying to use your technology.
Yeah, they basically use sort of like a SaaS model where they pay us to use this technology and maintain it and host it and all that stuff.
I see. So it sounds like a great idea, right? Like you have on one side the people who are trying to find these patients on whom they can do trials. On the other side, there are these patients who would love to benefit from this cutting edge, innovative research that is going on out there. But I don't want to make it sound like it was a very easy idea that you came up with and it was all flowers and roses from then on. I'm sure you must have had your own share of struggles and trying to figure out, right? So before I want to really understand all those things, but before I get to that, I wanted to learn more about yourself, Sharib. Like, where are you originally from and how did you end up in the US?
I'm originally from India. I mean, originally from Patna, Bihar. And, you know, I went to boarding school at Vellum Boys in Dehradun. And then after that, I went to medical college in Delhi University.
Is your boarding school by on the foothills of Himalayas?
Yes. Dehradun is in the foothills of the Himalayas, the Shivalik Mountains, and it's you know, famous for its boarding schools, in Vellum, Dune School, etc. So, yeah.
You also have it on your LinkedIn page that you used to do a lot of headstands when you were in the boarding school. Is that right?
Not in the boarding school, but yes, I do practice yoga. So I do headstands, and but not so much in boarding school. It was actually more after coming here that I got into yoga.
Oh, sorry. That was my wrong message. So I learned, you first learned to code in boarding school. Is that?
Yes, yes, that's right. Learned to code there when we were in grade 3. We had some BBC microcomputers, and you know, this was way back 80s. And we learned how to write some programs, and then, you know, did some work for our high school as well. And
so in 80s, it was not very common, right? Like computers were not very common. I did my 10th grade in 2002, and I grew up in the 90s and 7th, 8th standards. And at that time, when I got a computer, I was the first one among my friends to have a computer. But you're talking about coding in 80s.
Yeah, yeah. We had a few computers in 80s in our boarding school, which was very rare at that time in the country. So we were exposed to it quite early on.
Wow, right. That was very fortunate. Was there someone like a teacher or someone who was a visionary who got this to the school?
Our principal was very forward-looking, and you know, he always had the latest things in his mind. And I think they got some Sinclairs in the 81, 82 or something, and then they got some BBC microcomputers by 85, and then by 88, 89, they had started getting these very early IBM or HP or HCL PCs that were being, you know, assembled in India, the HCL PCs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then we had to write our own projects under computer science coursework by 10th, you know, by high school, and, you know, submit it. And
what language did you learn at that time? What coding language?
These computers were running BASIC. HCL computers and the BBC Micros computers had some language called Logo as well for drawing, which we used a little bit when we were in grade 3 and 4 and 5. So, yeah, we knew since then how to write some programs.
And you use these skills in your medical school, right? In this company called Elage, like you're telling me before we started here. What did you do during that time?
Well, not so much. I mean, in medical school, it was more, you know, medical school, actually, the college did not have computers. You know, my boarding school had, but the college only had like a couple of computers at that time for statistics work. So we actually didn't get much to do computer stuff there. And that's the time when computers, the IT industry was just beginning to get really, you know, present in India in 95, 96, 97 onwards. And the net was coming, you know, so there was talk about, you know, the internet and stuff. But for Elage, it was more working with the developers to, you know, just edit the content, the health content. So there I was using more my medical knowledge and hat than my computer stuff. Because, but it was interesting to work with these guys, learn about, you know, what is happening, learn about the web. Be able to be among the few people who could, you know, log on onto the internet at that time, you know, early 99s, and send, you know, understand email and all that stuff. So I learned some of that at large, and I would just help them edit the medical content.
I see. So this was back in 99?
Yeah, 2000? 99, around that time, 99.
What brought you to the US?
Yeah, but, you know, after that and after all the medical school stuff, you know, I knew that I had to, you know, come and do some stuff in biomedical informatics and see how to apply the computer science and information technology into the healthcare world. So, you know, Columbia has a very good program and a very good department of informatics. And
I'm curious to know, why were you interested in informatics at all? Because someone who did their someone who is planning to train as a doctor, looking towards a bioinformatics master's is not a typical career path, right? What was attractive to you that you wanted to take this up?
I mean, you know, the whole computer stuff from school and all was very interesting, and as I said, the department at Columbia had a really good mix of, you know, MDs and PhDs and the computer science folks. So it was, you know, it still is among the unique places that is at the intersection of all these areas. So you know, it was interesting to come and see what's going on here. And that's why in 2003,
but you're not discouraged by people around, by your parents, by others, that why are you taking this path and why are you not training as a doctor? Why are you not doing an MD?
I mean, you know, there's always these kind of things, especially back home.
Did that happen to you, though?
To an extent, people are always, you know, they wish you well and they, you know, want to know if you are, you know, making some right decisions. But overall, you know, there wasn't much much concern, given the fact that, you know, Columbia has a pretty good program. So they obviously understand that this is a good place to be. So there's a little bit of it always, but it wasn't a major concern. And that's why I was able to come and, you know, actually do the program and then take it on from there.
How about iFood.tv? When did you start working on that?
That was in 2006. So when we were from 2003 to 2005, I was in the informatics program, and I used to take some, sit into some, you know, you were allowed to take classes in other departments, and I think it's in 2005 maybe that I took a couple of courses in business school. And in that, there was a course on starting your own venture, launching new ventures. And it was a 2-semester course. And that's where I met Alok, a fellow student, you know, in the class. And he also turned out to be from, you know, the same town, you know, city in India, Patna. And, you know, he was doing his MBA. And we had to team up to do a project together in the class. And so we, you know, talked about our interests. And I teamed up with Alok, and we thought of some business proposals for the class. We at that time were looking at launching something called Cricket Highlights, which would stream highlights of cricket matches. This is 2005. And from there on, we were just discussing all of these. We, you know, participated in business plan competitions. You know, people really encouraged us to start something. They thought our ideas were good. So from all of that, you know, essentially it came down to iFood instead of cricket video streaming, because, you know, Alok felt that there is more easy content than, you know, trying to get rights to cricket games or stuff, et cetera. And then a lot of people were looking for recipes on the internet, and it was all text. So I think April 2006, we registered the company Future Today, and then we started working on different business plans. And then around October, November of 2006, we launched a very early version of iFood. And then I went on, found out chefs to record and put videos about for iFood. And one of the chefs we actually got, the first one, was Vikas Khanna, who was, you know, this was before he became a very famous chef, you know, with a Michelin star restaurant here in Manhattan, and, you know, being a judge in the Master Chef version of the show in India. So, you know, we recorded him, and he did a turkey video, and that was very successful. And from there on, iFood grew, and, you know, I worked with Alok and then Vikrant and others to help grow the website, grow the content, and then in 2008, Trilex happened.
But before we go on to Trilex, so it started, the future iFood.tv started as a class project. Is that right?
Not really as a class project. I mean, I met Alok there, and we started discussing things. We started learning and, you know, pitching different plans for business plan competitions and all. As I said, you know, earlier we thought we will make a website called Cricket Highlights, and then, you know,
got it.
But,
so,
know,
just the intro happened as a part of the course, but then
you
took it up later.
And, you know, brainstorming of a couple of ideas here and there, and eventually we participated in a business plan competition at the university, you know, called Outrageous Business Plan Competition or something like that, and we won a prize, you know, to be, as, you know, enthusiastic entrepreneurs, and they encouraged us. They gave us some money to also use it towards any entrepreneurship that we do. So, you know, we use some of that money to register the company. Future Today, we knew we were going to do something. We weren't exactly sure, but we also knew we wanted to do something that was futuristic. So that's how we came up with the name Future Today. Mm-hmm. And the company now still is. And, you know, Future Today ended up creating iFood in 2006. And then iFood moved, went on from website to Roku channel. And now, you know, Future Today has more than 500 or 600 Roku channels, from food to travel to kids to a bunch of things that Vikrant and I, Alok, run.
Yeah. So the Vikrant, one of the co-founders, I interviewed him earlier as well, and I'll leave the link to his interview in the show notes. But your goal was, or your role there was, to find more content or find more chefs to be on that.
What's one of the things, you know, as a young startup, you do a lot of things, you know, understanding with product, understanding website development, even doing some coding, also helping the development team debug things. Giving them product directions, you know, of course, working with content, you know, getting some videos done, hiring videographers, you know, hosts, and, you know, going to chefs and restaurants and shooting. Yeah, we did a lot. We even organized food events. We did a national, 2007 was 60th Independence Day of India and Pakistan. So we did a food event, Food Without, you know, Food Without Borders. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. And then we had Indian chefs and Pakistani chefs come, and there was food, there was music. We did Tango with Mango, a whole event with Vikas Khanna making food from different Indian mangoes. Yeah, so we did a lot of food-related activities to grow up iFood.
I see. So were you doing it full-time?
Pretty much, like, you know, weeknights, weekends. I was, you know, also working and also pursuing a part-time MPH. You know, so it was more like, you know, weeknights and weekends and, you know, all of that stuff.
But I see. But you still have a full-time job, which was which you were doing during the daytime, and you're trying to grow it in the nights and weekends.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff, yes.
Oh, wow. So, and you did that for 2 years? Throughout 2 years, you're doing it?
Yeah, we did that, and, you know, we did all, that's all we did, you know, just our startups and work, and it was great fun.
Yeah. So iFood seemed to have grown pretty well in the first few years as well, right? So you got a lot of traction. You had a good number of visitors. I think right now it's at 25 million or something. But even in 2008, I believe you started seeing some initial signs of success. Was that the case?
It took time, you know, few thousand, then tens of thousands. And as the content library grew, you know, more traffic. But it took some time. It took a couple of years up to, you know, 2009 before, you know, we had more traffic coming and more stability in the platform. It takes time. But yes, you're right. At certain times, there was a lot of traffic. And, you know, but over the last few years, the focus has moved to Roku and connected TV. So, you know, all that experience has now gone to the connected devices, which has, you know, been become a major focus of the company, Future Today. And, you know, with Alok and Vikrant really adding a lot of content partners and channels, it's sort of driving the next phase of evolution of iFood and Future Today.
When did you stop working with iFood.tv? When did TrialX come about?
Well, I kept, you know, I still sort of am associated with Future Today to some extent in terms of some advice and some strategy. But, you know, I got really involved with TrialX around May 2008. And then eventually by October 2008, we were launched and, you know, we had a...
What happened in May 2008 that you started getting this idea and started pursuing this idea? Was there an event that triggered this?
I mentioned to you before that we started from a Google hackathon. So
okay, so there was a Google hackathon and you went and participated in that and you got this idea in that event.
No, we had, you know, had it going on for some time in our minds. That's, you know, my business partner with TrialX, Chintan, and me, we had some idea about this area of, you know, matching patients to trial, etc. But the Google Hackathon event was an important event where Chintan developed a simple, you know, prototype. And then from there, Google came and said, you know, this is interesting. We want it on our health platform that we're launching. And so then we integrated with Google's health platform, Google Health, and then Microsoft had a health platform called HealthWard, and we integrated with them. And then essentially TrialX grew like from there on till we officially launched in October 2008, and with a little bit of, you know, with a story on personal health record platforms, and they mentioned TrialX as one of the apps integrated with Google Health and Microsoft Health Vault.
So from May 2008 to October 2008, the 5 months or 10 months that, or yeah, it is 5 months that it took for you to launch, what was the major activity? Were you building the product?
Yeah, is that the product, you know, building and, you know, integrating with these app, health platforms, and, you know, yeah, a lot of essentially coding for 5 months.
I see. So it sounds like you had some luck to start with, that Google was already interested and you had a partner that was invested in you in some sense, right?
Well, you know, you always helpful to have, you know, people to work with. I mean, I think companies usually have two co-founders or sometimes even three. Yeah, so Chintan had interest, and the hackathon was a good event. I mean, you know, the hackathon was a good event where which it allowed us to get notice from Google Health, but the platform was not yet launched yet. You know, Google Health had not yet launched. So they definitely saw value in what we were doing as well. So it was a combination of both, that we got a chance to be at the hackathon, and then from the hackathon, the folks at Google Health who were about to launch the platform, Google Health, in a few months, they got to know about what we did, and therefore, you know, it was a win-win for everybody.
I see. When did Google Health launch, and what was Google Health at that time?
Yeah, so it's launched, you know, around the time, July or something, when they officially launched, and it was a platform where you could go and manage and store and retrieve all your medical records online from different hospitals, or you can add it on your own and then add apps that could help you manage that health information more effectively. So it was a big initiative, but unfortunately Google eventually folded it in 2012 or 2013. It didn't 13, succeed.
Yeah. So you launched TrialX, and and you had Google support. What was the first version look like, or what were the features in the first version?
Well, it was an app inside the Google Health platform, so you could log into Google Health, add the app, and then the moment you would add the app, it would, you know, request access to your medical record that was stored in Google Health, and then you would give access. Then once it would get access, it's just like, you know, today's app, you give access, and then automatically the app pulls all the information, and then we would show you a matrix and say, based on your medical information, these are the trials that you match to 80%, these are trials you match to 60%. So there was a matrix with a rows of trials and columns being your personal medical information, and there would be a cross or a checkbox saying you match here, you don't match here, then a score, and there would be a button that says send email to this trial investigator if there was a good match, and then it would send that email, and then those investigators could then reach out back to you. And so, you know, people really liked it, and we got some initial users, and that was how it started.
So it was a platform within Google Health. So there were no apps at that time, right? Or was it
it was an app, like, you know, it was not like a mobile app, but it was an app within the Google Health platform, like you had Facebook apps within Facebook platform.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't mobile apps, but they were apps that were sitting inside that Facebook platform. Similarly, Google Health was an app. These apps, TrialX was an app within the Google Health platform.
I see. So I was trying to look at your 2009 version of your website, and I see that there was just a domain, but there was no website at that time.
Well, I don't know how you're looking at it. It may be some cached pages, and the caching might not have done it properly, but...
Did you have a page in the early 2000? Yeah, like when you first launched your...
Yeah, we
you started with the website also?
Yeah, I think we had a domain since 2008. Yeah, I
Okay.
think we had a different domain, tralex.org. So I think the .com came a few months later, or maybe a year later or something. But I
I
think we
see.
started with .org.
I see. Now, what I was wondering was the earlier version was only available inside Google Health, and for you to go by yourself out to the world, it took a while, but it was not the case. The website launched along with the Google Health
Almost
platform.
same time, maybe a month later or something,
I
but
see.
yeah, it was almost the same time. Yeah.
Apart from Google, who else did you get on your platform? Like Google's health platform alone is not going to sustain it, right? How do you get about finding more people who are going to come on your platform?
Well, as I said, we also worked with Microsoft's health platform called Health Vault,
How did you
and
get Microsoft onto your platform, or how did you start working with Microsoft? How do you get them as a customer?
it was a small. They weren't really customers, In fact, we were essentially, I mean, they were the platform, and they were looking for early adopters and, early app makers on those platforms. And both Google Health and Microsoft Health Vault were, the only players in town at that time. And therefore, they just knew if they saw one person on one thing, they also knew, and they would, there was a small world. It was a
Okay.
very early system. Days of app ecosystems, etc. So you would know who's doing what,
You had
and
the early movers advantage.
that plus, I mean, the whole concept of health records online and apps was very unique and very new at that time. So it was a small world, and you would know each other and get to know what's going on. And I think they found out through someone, and they also
I
reached
see.
out, and we talked, and then we integrated with their platform. So yeah, I don't exactly remember how it happened, but it happened very quickly, and it was a small world. There was just a few apps at that time that
Yeah.
were integrated with health platforms.
How about getting users? Were you completely leveraging Google and Microsoft to get more users for you, or were you
Yeah, I
trying?
mean, eventually it's like Apple Store and stuff. Essentially, initial adoption is by the platform itself being popular. So we were essentially, relying on that to be the main driver, and it was to an extent. But again, as these platforms didn't really scale too much towards that kind of adoption, we had to also have our own identity outside the platform through our domain, and then, working with other channel partners and other hospitals and stuff.
When did that happen? How long did it take for you to realize that you needed to have your own set of customers, and you can't just rely on Google and Microsoft?
No, I mean, we always knew Google Health and all was just one channel anyways. We knew that if you have to help patients find trials, you have to be everywhere. So we started with them, but behind the scenes in our business plan, we always knew that working with hospitals, other consumer health websites, and on our own will be important. You'll have to be in different places. You just can't be at one place.
I see.
But yes, we did start with them, and then eventually we started working with hospitals in 2009, and other partners.
Oh, do you remember any one hospital which was exceptionally hard to get onto your as to sign up as a customer or to sign up as a partner?
I mean, with hospitals, they have large enterprises. It always does take time to iron out the details, move the sales, and so I would say it wasn't really necessarily just a part of being difficult. It was just that their processes are indeed can be lengthy. But I would say, in fact, they were early adopters, and they were working on us on a very cutting edge thing. So I would rather say that they were forward looking to work with us to help bring trial finding on their websites, etc. Having said that, it does take time to work with enterprises, and therefore move things along.
Yeah, I was talking to another entrepreneur earlier who built a platform for university students to use. And if their app is installed on the university servers, and all the e-commerce purchases that happen through the university servers, a portion of that will come to the university. And when they tried to sell it to the university, they could not sell it because there was no one whose responsibility was to take care of the to impact the bottom line of server costs. you know. So they had to finally fold the model. So for hospitals, did they have someone who is incentivized to work with you? And how did you know who to work with? This seems like a very new domain where which doesn't fall in anyone's expertise as such, right?
No. Yeah, it's a, you know, you always have to find some internal champions. But having said that, you know, hospitals do a lot of research, and some of these academic medical centers, they do a lot of research. So they do have offices of clinical research and some dedicated people who are looking at, you know, technologies to help.
So you would reach out to those clinical research studies offices and try to say that, hey, do you want to be on board on our platform? Is that, was that your
That's
pitch?
That's just one way, but you do actually need to go to, you know other people. You have to know some thought leaders. You have to go to conferences. We met some people in conferences. We have, you know, met people through references, a lot of references. But yes, eventually, the for other entrepreneurs to, you know, working in large organizations, it's important to have an internal champion and understand what the value proposition is for the internal champion. And then that helps, you know, sustain the project and make it successful.
I see.
So, and then there are different channels, you know, personal relations, conferences, you know, reaching out, blogs. It could be any of these things that essentially helps you reach key decision makers and then find those champions who will bring your, you know, give your product the right attention in these large organizations.
So can you talk about one specific customer that you signed in early on who that makes for an interesting story?
I mean, Beth Israel, you know, Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, you know, we met the CIO of Harvard Medical School in a conference, and he liked the whole idea of Google Health app matching patients to trials. And then he we scheduled a call with him after the conference, and he was like, oh, this is, he's, you know, even my grandma can use this, and this is really nice. And then, you know, next, you know, he connected us to their VP of academic computing, and then we started the whole project. So yeah, just, you know, one conference meeting with a, you know, very forward-looking visionary person, and then, you know, they're liking what you're doing and giving you, you know, that thumbs up to then connect you to the right person in the organization to start work with. So that was a, you know, interesting way this whole thing went about.
Were you also asking them to pay you at this time?
Well, yeah, we did have, well, for some very, we had a subsidized model. And in one case, we also had some free for a certain amount of time. And then, you know, they would, based on performance and stuff, utilize it. But
what would they pay? What was the pricing like?
Less, you know, we did have some pricing, you know, into the initial adopters. We kept it very, you know, reasonable that they can try the technology.
What was it? How much did you charge?
On the top of my head, this is way back. I know for sure that for a couple of them, we did try for some time as, you know, the early adopters. They had it for free. Mm-hmm. And then and at some point, we graduated to, you know, a few thousand dollars per month, kind of, you know.
So it was a standard fee of a couple of thousand dollars per month, and anyone who matches, they get to interact with the patient. So it was not per patient basis. It was just a fixed cost that they would pay every month.
Yeah, because you're selling a technology solution to them, not just, you know, per patient lead model. So,
okay.
You know, it wasn't that way. You know, it was just a fixed fee of running the software, maintenance, etc. And that's pretty much what the business model is on the hospital side. We, you know, charge them annual maintenance fee to host the service and maintain it, and a one-time setup fee. So,
how much? How did you know how much to charge? Whether 2,000 was right, or were you, should you charge 10,000, or how did you know how much to charge?
I wouldn't put the figure 2,000. I just said we started with a few thousand dollars.
I see.
And then you just, you know, see what's the value proposition to them, what's their budgets like, and then you just play accordingly.
I see. So you started with a price and adjusted it to match the thing. So you started with Google, like leveraging Google Health and their health information, right? But it, when it folded in 2012, you must have lost a lot of data. Like, how do you continue to maintain the patient's data on your platform without the help of Google Health?
Well, with Google Health, it wasn't that we were always getting a lot of data or anything. We from very beginning always had our own platform. So it wasn't a big loss for us if, you know, one of the platforms didn't continue. We always had our own infrastructure and from very early on. So
you'd have the health data of the patients on your own platform anyway. Is that what you say?
If they came to our platform directly and just added their information, yes, we had it from day one.
Okay.
And with Google Health, you know, we only just took the basic minimum data that we needed to match them to trials. And it wasn't that we were getting like terabytes or GBs or hundreds of thousands of records or
Got
something.
It.
It was just a small user base. And we would just look at a few things and see what was essential to match them to trials. And we always had the capacity to store all the data on our end as well, even if the platform didn't exist.
So for the users who come directly to your platform, you're taking their word for their health records. Is that what you're doing?
Well, with users, when they come to our platform, they really don't know much about their health record. Then they're just essentially typing in a few things like, I have diabetes, I live here, this is my, you know, I'm looking for trials for diabetes or cancer, and then a few filters about their age, zip code.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really have much detail about all their medical information, so you really can't ask them to enter all that. With Google Health, it used to be all automated.
Mm-hmm.
Because the health record would come from the hospitals that Google Health was partnering with,
mm-hmm.
or data that patients had entered in detail or otherwise inside the health record platform. So with Google Health, they didn't have to enter anything in our app. Our app would just read information that was already stored inside the health platform.
So was the limited information that the patients give enough for you to match to the trials?
Yeah, I think, you know, with the medical condition, zip code, gender, age, a couple of other things, you can suggest them, pretty good number of trials. And then eventually when they contact the research sites, they will do more digging up and asking and, you know, testing, etc. needed to recruit them in the study. So, you know, your job is to connect them to something that's reasonably relevant to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then let the doctors and the researchers do all the work to find out if that person is really suitable for that study or not.
I see. How do you find the users to come and put their information online? Apart from those coming from Google and Microsoft, how do you find users to come directly to your platform?
As I said, you know, patients are looking for it. They'll Google search it. Then they will, you know.
How did they hear about it for them to Google search? Because I was looking at where the traffic is coming from your website. It's either most of the traffic is either through Google search or directly entered as a domain on the web page. There are no referrals. Like you're not getting traffic from other sources. It's either direct or through Google search. So how are these people learning about TrialX to start with? That they can Google search for it or they can...
You know, we've been there for some time. And as I said, a lot of our business is now working with the hospital. So a lot of these people are using a technology on these hospital websites. They don't necessarily have to come to TrialX.
I see.
As I said, the business model of this is that, you know, we are providing the solutions on these third-party websites like hospitals, patient advocacy groups, consumer health websites as widgets. So patients don't even necessarily need to come to TrialX, but, you know, we have been there for some time. People have heard about us. Sometimes they'll just Google by name. Some of our studies, you know, pages might show up on Google searches. But our main driver is that patients don't necessarily have to come to our site. They can find our trial matching on hospital websites, on, you know, pharmaceutical company websites, on, you know, patient advocacy groups, you know, on disease and health and wellness information websites. So that's where we live. And as small you know, as widgets or as full pages, and patients find things there and connect with the investigators.
So I saw, I'm on your website and I am on the products portion of the web page, and I see the first two things, which is iConnect and Ask Dory.
Yeah,
iConnect, yeah. What is the difference between the two?
So as I said, iConnect is the whole platform where if you just click on it and you go and you see these are the platforms that the hospitals are using, where it lists all the trials for them, it, you know, tracks all the leads coming in, etc. The Ask Dory is the more the search part, which just the patients use, and this Dory system lives in you know, patient communities, widgets here and, you know, in other health and wellness websites. It's just the trial search part. iConnect is not just the search, listing the trials, getting the trials in, tracking all the leads that are coming in, replying to the patients. All of that part is covered within
iConnect. I see. So iConnect is more
enterprise version of the software, which is now, you know, being used by these hospitals, etc.
So iConnect is geared towards selling to the hospital, and AskDory is more towards the end user.
The end user, and it can live inside any of these health and wellness websites. For example, one of our partners is Patient Power. If you go to patientpower.info, they have, you know, just started to put our widgets there. And, you know, if you go to chronic lymphocytic leukemia, you know, you will find a link, find clinical trials. When you click that link, it's our Dory widget sitting there, helping their patient population find trials. Or we have another partner, you know, the MMRF, you know, Multiple Myeloma Research Foundation. If you go to their website, if under the clinical trial section, you know, you will find our technology providing the trial search experience.
I see. So one question which I missed asking you earlier, Sharif, is when you were, you came to the US and you started doing masters, you must have been on a visa, right? How did that let you start your company and work in a startup?
Well, you know, I was an F1 and then I got an H1. So when you were an H1, I also had H1 with my startup.
I see. So the startup that you were working with was willing to sponsor H1 for you, which usually is hard for a startup, which is why I have so many people ask me that question in particular. But at that time, it seems like your company was able to do it for you. Yeah. What?
You know, it's a challenge, and you have to be able to work with it. And we had to, you know, just like all the rules, you know, you have to company, you have to file the H1s, we have to support the H1s, and that's how we started.
Mm. What is your revenue like right now?
It's you know, it's been good. We are supporting a team of 30 people in total between our offices here in the US and India and Philippines. You know, between Applied Informatics and TrialX, we are able to support, I would say, a decent-sized team. So,
is it over $1 million?
It's difficult to break it down and stuff. And I would say, you know, I would say it's in the, you know, $1 to $10 million range. So, I can't give an exact number for it, but you know. I would put ourselves in that category.
I see. I asked the number specifically because it's really motivating for people who are hearing to listen to a number. It puts things in perspective. So what you said is
yeah, it's good. In that ballpark.
So what? Mm-hmm, 1 to 10 million. What is next for TrialX and for you, Sharif?
Yeah, we, as I said, are getting into a lot of mobile research studies, so, and you know, mobile health and research related apps. So if you see in TrialX, we have just launched something called America Walks study. It's actually pretty new. It's the research study app where you download and you can participate in a research study that is tracking how much people walk across America, and you can see how much you're walking compared to everybody else in the study and break it down by demographic categories. You can see how much people are walking in your city or state compared to everybody else. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, we just got it out, and it uses Apple's research kit. But we have also ported it to Android so that the study runs on Android as well as iOS devices. And now we're talking to a lot of our university partners who want to build similar research apps. And I would highly encourage you to go to trialx.com/AmericaWalksStudy and actually look at the app, download it, participate in the study. In along these activities of health and wellness, we do have another app called Burning Man, which is more like been an experimental app for us, where we you download the app and you earn bitcoins for walking. So the more you walk, the more bitcoins you earn every month. And we have a lot.
Who's paying these bitcoins?
Right now, TrialX is sponsoring these bitcoins, but eventually we hope that, you know, we have enough users that we can get sponsorship from health and wellness companies. You know, right now we sponsor the bitcoins, and we have a lot of users who really use the app and love it. And we have approximately 250 million steps walked in the app since we launched last December 2015. So in around 4 months, we have like around 250 million steps walked by users in Burning Man.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Maybe I should have interviewed about how you built that. I didn't pick the right one, I guess.
Yeah. About it at some point. But yeah, you should look at burningmanapp.co and download it.
So you're trying to go more mobile in the future. That's where you're headed.
It's one of our focus areas for sure. But again, not just any mobile app. It's all mobile apps related to research and wellness and health and fitness, you know, all playing with the health, the broader concept of health.
Mm-hmm. So if someone, what advice do you have for other immigrant entrepreneurs, Sharib, based on your experience?
I mean, I would say the, you know, advice is for all entrepreneurs, if there is one, you know, whether immigrant or non-immigrant, you just have to know that you really want to do this. I think that's really important. I mean, both with iFood founders, like, you know, Alok, Vikrant, you know, my TrialX co-founders, you know, Chintan, and, you know, we just know that this is the most important thing that we want to do, is, you know, work on our ideas and startups, and you really have to believe in it. You know, it's going to be very tough at times, it's going to be challenging, but you will go through it, because you don't, you know, there's nothing else that you would like to do or you would want to do other than working on what you really are excited about and passionate about. And I think that's the most important thing. You know, there's a lot of people have great ideas, but it's really, well, you know, how much are you willing to go for it and give it to it? So I think, you know, some of us, you know, it's just that this is it. There's nothing else that wouldn't be important or useful for us to do. So when you have that mindset, you know, you just have to make it work somehow or the other and keep pushing the limit and, you know, working on new, you know, concepts to be innovative and provide a useful, valuable service.
If someone wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to connect with you online?
Best way is just send me an email, sharib@trialx.com, trialx.com. Yep.
I will leave your email in the show notes as well. Sharib, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for the opportunity to be on your talk show. This is interesting. I also enjoyed the questions, and yeah, happy to provide any insights to anybody else, and wish your show a big success. And I hope it inspires a bunch of entrepreneurs who go on to build the next big billion-dollar companies.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again, and have an amazing day.